What's up, everybody? You are listening to the Early Risers Podcast. I'm your host, Skylar Deem, and I am an early riser. Now, when I say early riser, I don't necessarily mean someone who wakes up at a certain time. You don't have to be up at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. When I say early riser, all I mean is someone who wakes up earlier than they have to in order to get some form of uninterrupted personal development in the morning. So if you have to wake up at 10 a.m. to get somewhere on time and you decide you're going to wake up at 9:30 and perform some sort of a morning routine, you are an early riser. Today's special guest is Jonathan Pritchard. Jonathan is an entertainer turned speaker, coach, and author. Colleges, businesses, and entrepreneurs book him to talk about his insights into human behavior, success psychology, motivation, and communication. For the past decade, Jonathan has been on TV and he has toured the world as a mentalist, which has given him unique insight into why people do what they do and how to leverage that process to create a custom fit life. I really enjoyed speaking with Jonathan. He had some super insightful things to say. We cover everything from being a mentalist, Jonathan's experience on America's Got Talent, to the importance of organizing your brain. If you want to see anything from today's episode, you can find the show notes at earlyrisersmovement.com/ERM36. And before diving into the episode, I did just want to mention that my habit and performance coaching program is officially open. So if you've been trying in the past to change a major part of your life, whether that's your nutrition, your exercise habits, or of course, my personal favorite, your morning and evening routines, I want to help you move forward and make actionable, positive steps forward on a daily basis. So if that's something you're interested in, you can check the show notes for the link, or you can head directly to earlyrisersmovement.com/coaching to apply or for more details. With all that being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. So today's special guest is Jonathan Pritchard. How are you doing today, Jonathan?
Doing way too well, man.
Awesome. I'd love to hear it. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm super excited to share your story with the listeners and share a little bit about what you're doing. Do you mind just starting us off, opening up about who you are and kind of a little bit of the backstory of how you got here?
Not at all. It's a long story short. I was raised in North Carolina, college in Kentucky, summers in Fort Lauderdale working with a mentor of mine, and lived in Austin, Texas, now in Chicago. I've traveled the world, entertained the troops stationed overseas, performed in Vegas, worked for Fortune 500 company clients, helping them engage their clients and audiences at live events. And I've done all of that as a mentalist, which is basically somebody that can stand on stage and convince a room full of sane, skeptical people that I can read minds. And it's not because I'm psychic. It's just that I understand human psychology and how to leverage the way that people think to get them to think what I want them to. So I've worked as an entertainer and then transitioned into the role of a speaker and a consultant, because as an entertainer, I always thought, well, I help people forget their problems for an hour, but the techniques I'm using on stage are applicable in life and business. So why not take people behind the mental curtain and help them solve their problems long term instead of just forgetting them? So that's kind of why I've been transitioning into sharing my knowledge and experience with as many people as I possibly can. And that's why I woke up today to do that with your audience. So hi, everybody.
Awesome. Awesome. And we'll definitely dive into that because that's so, so helpful. You know, so many people kind of live their lives without that purpose of helping other people. But I think when you find what you're passionate about and how you can use that to help other people, it's super, super powerful. But how did you get into this field of work? I feel like mentalist is a really, really out there field that not a lot of people even know much about.
Right. Yeah. I niched down really hard, man. Like I have a very narrow area of specialty that there aren't a lot of people. So there's not a lot of competition, which is good. So the way that I got there was growing up, I was interested in doing magic tricks. I saw a magician on TV and I was like, wait a minute, that's cool. So I did magic growing up, but it was just for me and my family. I would just bother my mom, like, hey, mom, pick a card. Right. So she's the real trooper in this story. So I grew up doing that. And in junior high, I started realizing that the mind reading tricks seemed to freak people out more than finding their card, but telling them what they're thinking. All right, now that's really cool. So then I got interested in just the mind reading angle. And in college, I got connected with my mentor, James Randi, who had a $1 million challenge to anybody who claimed to be psychic. If you've got supernatural powers and can demonstrate it in a way that won't allow trickery, well, then you get $1 million. So for four years in college, I was the guy handling applications for the $1 million challenge and designing testing protocol for people. So I saw every way that people were trying to scam their way to the money and thought, I can do these scams better than they can. And then that's how I put together my stage show, because Randy is an old school magician. He was on Happy Days. He was on the Carson Show 30 something times, hung upside down from a helicopter, escaping from a straitjacket. Like, that's his background. So working with him side by side was just a master's class in understanding not only what people are thinking, but why magic is even possible in the first place. Because if you start thinking about it, it shouldn't be possible, right? You can't do a magic trick for a computer or for a video camera. The only place that magic and mentalism exists is in people's minds. So we've got some wiring hiccups in our brains and in our minds that allow our assumptions to be used against us, right? And a way that I like to explain it is, if you're walking up a set of stairs and you assume that there's one more than there actually is, your foot will go through nothing when you expect there to be solid ground, and you're off balance, and it's a really disorienting experience. But in the context of a magic show, it's exactly the same process, but it's framed as a "this is fun" process, right? But there are charlatans, fraudsters, just a whole bunch of flim-flam artists that take advantage of our willingness to believe and our natural process of making assumptions about the world, and then use that to deceive you, right? But that process is happening all the time by yourself too. So the person that's fooling you the most is you, but it's on a fundamental level that you're not cognizant of. You're not consciously aware of it because it's a fundamental operating system level. So it's kind of like your computer program being able to talk to the hardware and know what hardware is doing or what, right? It just doesn't compute. Mm-hmm. So your body is your hardware, your mind is your software, and software can have glitches, right? So it's just, to me, the most fascinating thing I've ever found in my life. And it's a wonderful context for me to explore my creativity and helping people understand how they themselves are thinking themselves out of opportunities, out of resources, out of success, right?
Mm. I'd love to actually dive into that a little more. You know, people's thought processes and how we can kind of use what you know to our advantage.
All right. So the, to me, one of the most powerful effects is understanding that our senses, we think that they are there to bring in information, but really our senses filter out most information, right? Because if you were consciously aware of every single detail that you could possibly be consciously aware of, you would have a seizure, right? It's just too much information for your mind to handle. So our process of being aware of our world filters out most of the unimportant information, which leads you to the natural question of, well, how do you know what's important and what's not? And that is put into place from your previous experience, right? So when you're a kid, you're starting to figure out the world, but you're not figuring out the world, you're figuring out your way of seeing the world. So then your value structure of your of what you value gets installed into the filtering process. So whatever it is that you don't value, what you don't think is worth paying attention to, gets actively filtered out of your conscious awareness. So then what you perceive is only what you find valuable, right? So that's why you only see what it is that you are looking for. And a really cool experience that shows you that this process is in place is, say, you buy a new car and then suddenly you see it everywhere, right? It's not that the universe saw that you bought the car and then put more of them on the street. It's that it's new to you and now you value it. So your pre-filtering process goes, oh, so this particular detail is now valuable. Let's let it through, right? So you start noticing it everywhere. The same process in a different context. You're in a cocktail party and it's really loud and it's tough to hear the person that you're looking at in the face and you're talking with right now. But then suddenly from across the room, you hear your name just clear as a bell, right? So you're hearing everything going on, but your pre-conscious process is filtering everything out until your name pops through. And then that's given preferential treatment because, hey, that's the most valuable thing in the world, right? So then you're able to cut through all the noise and hear the most valuable thing in the world, which is your name, right? So you get this weird feedback loop. So whatever it is that you value is the only thing that your mind shows you. So you get this distorted belief that it's the only thing that is seen, right? It's clearly the only way to see the world because I have this evidence that it's the only thing to see, right? So that's why when you change your mind, you change your value structure, you're going to change your fundamental experience of reality. It really is that powerful. And the box you've built from your values dictates the experiences that not only that you have, but that you can have. Because these value structures dictate what it is you're going to be fundamentally aware of. So it's such a powerful process. It is so incredibly powerful. And it happens on a level that people aren't consciously aware of. So they're not mindful that it's of its effect in their life. Mm-hmm. And so anything that people go, yeah, well, it's easy for him to say, it's not blank, right? That's their value structure asserting its influence on what it is they're even capable of appreciating in the first place.
And that's definitely something a lot of people are guilty of, including myself.
Right. And it's not even a guilty thing. It's we've evolved to do this, right? This is just how you operate. This is fundamental human operating system stuff. Like it's not that, that you're a bad person for doing it. It's just that you have a poor understanding of how you work, right? So it's even before value judgment, good and bad, it's here's the system, man, make it work for yourself.
So now that people kind of understand that and that has came to light and, you know, once you become more mindful of it, what are the next steps to kind of hack that, or if that is possible to hack that to make it work for you rather than against you?
It's kind of like telling a fish to not swim in water anymore. It's just okay. No, this is where I live. This is how I know things work. Good luck with that, man. Right? Because the next thing to do is, all right, you now are aware of that this process happens, but awareness is not liberation from that situation, right? So you can be aware of it and still not understand it. And then even if you understand the process inside and out, you're still not free of its effects, right? Because you can't really just bootstrap your way out of it. So the thing to do is to get a mentor, to get a coach, right? somebody like, oh, me, right? who doesn't have your belief structure, who doesn't have your experience, who really does understand this process inside and out. So then a coach or a mentor can actively see your belief structure from the outside, right? Because our experience is in its internal logic is flawless. It all makes sense to you, so you think it's perfect, right? But then somebody who doesn't think the way that you think, who can do things that you can't do, can recognize those faulty beliefs and then challenge them in a way that you would never be able to recognize in yourself thinking to yourself, right? So that's why having a mentor, having a coach who can see into your mind and into your belief structure by virtue of understanding your decision-making process and the results you get in your own life, they go, all right, I now understand why you're getting the results that you get. It's because you have these beliefs. And the person goes, I've never thought of those beliefs, but isn't that just the way the world works? And then you can actively do battle with those belief systems that aren't getting you the results that you want. So you could try to think your way out of this and spend 30 years and get some progress, or get somebody who's been there, done that, and can just catapult you out of your limited belief structure.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, its implications are terrifying. Like, if you're listening to this and you aren't scared, you're not listening hard enough.
So I know you also wrote a book, right? It's called Think Like a Mind Reader. Would you mind speaking a little bit on the topic of that book and maybe going in a little bit into, you know, what the book talks about and what we can kind of learn from it?
Yeah. The reason I wrote that is, so I started out as just an entertainer, just making people laugh, forgetting their problems, right? But I'm doing it by leveraging fundamental psychology. And I grew up in the mountains of North Carolina in a town, like my entire county had 50,000 people in it. Like, that's it. And we were dirt poor. We grew up in a single wide trailer on a dirt road. Like, literally, that is where I grew up. And from there, I've traveled the world. I work for myself. I have control over my time, who I spend that time with, what I spend that time on, and what I do with me is completely under my control. There's not one person that with a phone call can make me do anything, right? Like, I don't have a boss. I don't have anybody controlling me, my time, or my attention. And to me, that's success. But it's so far off the standard social narrative of what we're told is success, right? We're told from an early age, you got to sit down, listen to the teacher, do what they say to get a good grade, to get into a good college so that you can get a degree, to get a good job at a job that requires a certification for this degree. And then you want that so that you can buy all this stuff and pay for this house to then retire with a gold watch. It's like, well, that life doesn't exist anymore, man. Like, that world just doesn't exist. If you don't control yourself, if you don't have a way of making a living and ways of making a living, right, then your boss can ruin your entire way of being. So now you're held captive to this system that you've bought into, right?
For sure. And that system too was made in a time where it was more about survival. But exactly. I think as a society, we've reached the point where it's less about survival because we kind of got that under lock, and it's more about just thrival now.
Exactly. I mean, if you're listening to this conversation, you have the most powerful creation device in the history of human beings. Your cell phone can, it's a whole movie studio. You can make a podcast. You can make videos. You can share information with anybody in the world that has a device like it. Like, we live in a totally new realm. Like, Gutenberg created the printing press. Well, he didn't create the printing press. The Chinese culture had the printing press like 1500 years before he did, but his real insight was, one, durable, easily made, well, relatively easily made movable type with a phonetic alphabet. So those were the three technologies that combined to make that printing press the revolutionary thing. So he starts printing books left and right, relatively speaking, and literacy and information exploded. And that benefited everybody except the kings and the rulers, who benefited from having illiterate populations, right? So it was a total revolution of human knowledge and experience. Then the internet comes along. That makes Gutenberg's revolution look like chump change, man. We're living in a world of abundance, of free information, of the ability to create in a way that almost every single human being who has ever been alive had never even been able to dream of having, right? And I'm coming back to it. I promise I am, because that's kind of what happened with me after my shows, right? So I do a show at a college, and these college kids will line up for 45 minutes for an autograph after the show. They don't know that I'm not a rock star, so to them, I am, right? So I amaze them, and I predict their behaviors. I influence their choices. I read their minds. I tell them where they grew up, all that good stuff. And they're just like, this is a great – this is insane. So they would line up for autographs. And then as I'm signing autographs, these college kids would go, man, you're living the dream. You're traveling. You're getting to do what you love. You're getting paid for it. I can't even imagine doing that. And that was the magic phrase for me. I can't even imagine it. Look, if you can't even imagine a possibility, how are you going to make it a reality? Right? You have to be able to dream it before you can make it happen, right? So these poor college kids have been sold this story of stay in line, shut up, don't step out of line, don't create anything, just accept what we give you, right? Be a consumer, don't produce anything. So I started talking to these kids after shows and going, dude, here's how I think about stuff. Here's how I make my choices. Here's how I make opportunities happen. They don't present themselves. You create them. Right? So here's how to think about all this stuff. And then I started getting emails back like a year later going, thank you so much for talking to me. That made all the difference in the world. Here's what I'm doing now. And I couldn't be happier. You blew my mind. Right. I've never thought of it like that. So then I realized, dang it. Now I have to teach, right? Because the way that I've grown up, the way that I just have thought about the world for most of my life didn't come naturally. I just had phenomenal teachers early, early, early in my life. So I've had a lot of practice doing things this way. So I started recognizing that these are all the same kind of 20 conversations, the same 20 topics kept coming up again and again. So I recognized, all right, this is kind of the core of what you need to do to get your life on track and start designing a life that fits you perfectly. So I crammed all those stories from the road, my life lessons, stories from my career of going on national television, performing in Vegas, all that good stuff. So I shared stories that embodied these principles that I used to make choices in my own life to live a life that's beyond most people's imaginations. Well, once you see one person can do it, now it's a possibility for you. So this way, if somebody is listening going, holy crap, I've never thought of stuff like this. I need to know how this dude thinks. Well, now all of those ideas are packed into those pages, and now you can have that conversation with me without me having to physically be there, right? So to me, it's one of the best ways of providing value for people's lives in as many different ways as I possibly can, right? So infinite number of people can buy my book, but I can't talk to infinite numbers of people one-on-one in real space. So to me, it was the best way that I knew how to try to help as many people as I could. So that long story short is how and why I put the book together.
Yeah, it's awesome too. I read the beginning and right away you dove into the topic of organizing your mind. And I just kind of like to go into a little bit, you know, why organizing your mind is such an important thing for everyone to be doing.
Yeah. So, to me, all right, I promise this is getting to your question. I'm still upset about the Library of Alexandria burning down thousands of years ago. Right? It was the repository of all human knowledge. It was the biggest repository of human knowledge in antiquity, and then it burned down. Like, who knows what treasures were lost and how far back humankind was set because of all that knowledge that was lost. So I've always recognized the value of libraries and the accumulation of knowledge and having it at your fingertips and how valuable that is. But it's not just having the knowledge that's valuable. The amazing technology of a library is organizing that knowledge, right? So say you had all of human knowledge available to you, but you couldn't find it, right? Like, good luck stumbling through Google, right? That's why Google is so valuable. It knows how to organize information in a way that makes it useful. So knowledge isn't power. Organized knowledge applied in your life is powerful, right? So many people think, just because I think and I have ideas, that that's enough. That's like saying, because you walk, you could compete in the Olympics in a sprint. Right? Most people think they're fantastic communicators because they talk a lot. No, that it's a very difficult skill and requires hard work, effort, and organized application of energy, right? So that's why you've got phenomenal mental resources. You've got phenomenal mental potential. But if you don't have the skill of organizing it and putting it into play, putting it into application in a systematic way, you're not going to get anything done, right? So that's why organizing your mind and wrangling it and focusing your attention and concentration will get you results, not just whatever it is you're feeling today, right? Thinking and daydreaming is not focused attention. And we live in a world of that technology, that most fundamentally powerful potential to create, we use it to distract ourselves, right? We've got our notifications set on, and any app, any stranger on Twitter mentions our name and ding, oh, now I got to look at it, right? Some stranger, you don't know who it is, could be some asshole, right? And you've given them the ability to distract you, to diffuse your focus, to keep you from creating something of value in the world, right? So that's why, to me, organizing your mind, organizing your information is building a structure that can actually withstand a lot of stress, can navigate, can maneuver. Right? Otherwise, you just got a lot of bits and bobs just strewn about on the floor. That's not going to be useful. So that's why step one is organizing your mind, making it work for you, and you, the awareness of the mental processes, being in control instead of just allowing whatever momentary thought, feeling, or emotion to jerk you around and control you instead of you organizing yourself.
That's crazy powerful. I'd like to bounce around a little bit, and I saw you were on America's Got Talent, and I'd love if you could. Yeah, that's just awesome. I'd love if you could talk a little bit about your experience, but also kind of dive into, you know, what goes into reading someone's mind, because I know, you know, obviously you're not actually reading their mind, but there's got to be things you analyze in a person that can kind of help you understand where their mind is headed. And I'd love if you could, yeah, not only share about your time on America's Got Talent, but also kind of dive into that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, first I'll kind of walk through what the experience was like, and then I will give you the secret to every single mentalism trick, magic trick that you've ever seen and will ever see. So don't let me forget that. Perfect. So the experience is phenomenal. It's amazing. It's wonderful. I am so glad I went through it, and it's grueling. So the first several rounds you do in one day, and I live in Chicago. So when they came through Chicago, I had a time schedule. I didn't need to stand in line because they go, yeah, we know you're a professional that, all right, we don't want to waste your time either. So you go in. You do your shtick once for two guys behind a table and one cameraman. They go, well, that was cool. Can you do it again? They go, yeah. So then some other showrunner walks you to this holding room with fewer people in it now, and you fill out more paperwork, and then you sit there for an hour or two. And the whole time you're all like keyed up, right? You're like, I'm doing it. I'm doing the thing. I'm going to be on TV. So it's a high stress environment for a very prolonged time. So your adrenal system just exhausts you, right? So you're just psyching yourself out the whole time. So that's why stress management, meditation, being able to not let your mind run can really help you in real life situations, right? So then eventually some other showrunner shows up and they go, Jonathan, you're like, yep, that's me. You're coming with me. All right, I'm going with you. So they walk you to this random room, but now there are eight people behind a longer table, and now there are two camera guys. So then they go, all right, do what you do. So then you do your same shtick, and they go, oh, that was great. Yeah, can you stick around for a while? Sure can. So then somebody else you've never met comes and takes you, and then they go, all right, we're going to the room. So then they take you upstairs, you're going up the elevator, you're making small talk, and then it's the big holding room that you see on the show. So then the showrunners and the producers are going, all right, we need everybody to sit over here to make it look full while this guy does whatever. So then they go, all right, you, Jonathan, start setting up your shtick. I want it to look like you're getting ready to go into the audition. You go, awesome, cool. So then you do your thing and they go, all right, that was good. This time, hold it up and look at it a little bit more by your face, so that way we can have it in frame and look at it a little while. And then put it down. Perfect. So then you do that. They go, all right, that was great. So this time, right? And you do that for hours, right? You're doing that for hours. So then they go, well, thank you so much. That was fantastic. You'll hear from us. And then miraculously, you hear from them. And they go, we love you. We want you to come out to New York for the in-person taping in front of the judges. So they arrange all that and they fly you out. And then it's eight in the morning call time. And then it's more of that, right? Sit here, do this. All right. You're going to go over here and talk to that guy, and he's going to interview you about your background. And then that's where they're doing the talking head segments. And then it's hours and hours of doing that. And then, all right, move over here. And right. And it's everything but doing what it is you're good at doing. And then hours and multiple holding rooms later, then it's 4 p.m. and then you're standing in the wings eventually, right? After you've done your tech rehearsal and you walk out on stage and you put your stuff there, and then some tech that you've never met before is looking at your very carefully needs to be exactly like this setup, who's never seen the setup before. He goes, yeah, I got it. And then whisks your props away to the prop room, right? It's like, all right. So my super sensitive equipment, it's got to be within millimeters, tolerances. I'm now trusting some dude I've never met before to set it up before I go out for my national television debut. No pressure, right? So now you're in the wings and all the acts are going out, and then you hear the audience boo or they cheer and they get the X's. And it's just like what I imagine a gladiator would feel like, right? under the arena, hearing the crowd and knowing that pretty soon you're going to go out there and fight for your life. But you don't know when. Oh, let's get you mic'd up. Oh, it's going to be now. Nope, it's still 45 minutes later, right? So there are all these cues for a high-stress response that don't result in the high-stress dynamic. Right, so there are all these opportunities to think, oh, this is it, and then your adrenaline dumps and you're like, yeah, and then it's more waiting, it's more talking, right? So it is just emotionally exhausting. And then they go, all right, you're up, So you stand in the wings and Nick Cannon comes over and he goes like, hey, man, you excited? Like, I am. He's like, awesome. Go out and do your thing. You're like, yeah. So then you walk out on stage and then there's 3,000 live people. Then there's Howard Stern, Heidi Klum, Mel B, and Howie Mandel. Right. So those are the four judges. And, you know, go do the thing.
Yeah, that's got to be stressful, man. How'd it go?
Yeah. I got 3 out of 4 yeses. They liked me enough to send me through to the next round. I was awesome. Like, thank you. And the audience was like, let him through. Let him through. So Mel B was kind of on the fence. So Howie Mandel said no. Howard Stern said yes. Heidi Klum said yes. And Mel B was on the fence. And then the audience started chanting for me. And I almost started crying. I was like, thank you so much. Thank you. And so I got through and thank you, go off stage. And then it's a several more hours of filming. Now, you're not done yet. And then the producer's like, yeah, we'll be in touch. And then months go by and the show starts and the producers still haven't been in touch. Right. Mm-hmm. They don't tell you that the producers aren't going to bring you back. They let you stay on the hook to produce, like, so that you'll share on social media, hey, watch America's Got Talent this year. It'll be really exciting for this reason I can't explain, right? So they don't want to tell you that you're not going to be featured in the next round so as to keep you on the line promoting the show for as long as possible until you figure out the gag.
Wow. Right? That's disappointing.
So, yeah, so the judges let through more people than make it onto the broadcast, so that the producers have as much material to create the most compelling television that they can make. So the show is not an accurate display of skill and ability of the most talented people in America. It's the most compelling television experience for the home viewer.
Mm. Is there a place that listeners and I can watch that performance by you?
No, the full thing never made it to air.
Oh, like, man.
I got a couple seconds. Yeah, like that footage is insanely valuable to me, and I'll never see all of it.
Wow. Disappointing.
Yep.
All right, well, yep. To kind of pick up the pace again, I definitely want to hear more about your techniques for reading someone's mind and this huge, big secret.
Absolutely. So the techniques and the tactics all function within this strategic mindset. So we're going up a level of abstract, right? So this is the situation. This is the nature of understanding reality, right? Here's the secret. The mentalist creates a context for the audience to make logical assumptions that are later shown to not be true. So that's every single trick, every single mentalism demonstration, every single magic trick that you've ever seen in your life, right? Yeah. So there's an agent of action, the mentalist, the magician, the communicator, the salesperson, right? They create a context. Every bit of your communication, it's the words you're using, it's the tone of voice, how you're saying it, how fast you're saying it. Are you saying it in person? Are you saying it through an email? Are you saying it on video? Are you saying it on stage? Right? Are you the authority figure? Do you have a company backing you up? Are you somebody who's trustworthy? What's the rapport? Everything around the message is the context that gives the words that you're saying the meaning. Right? All the behaviors, all your physical actions, all the words, their meaning, their content work together to create the framework for the person who's hearing it to understand what it is that you mean. Mm. Right, so that's the audience is seeing and hearing everything that you're doing, where you're doing it, when you're doing it, right? All of that informs the meaning of the content. And based on the meaning of the content, the person hearing it makes certain assumptions about what that means, right? And it's like we talked about earlier, it's internally logically consistent. it makes sense to them. So that's why communication is so difficult, is because everybody that hears what you're saying is interpreting it within the context of their internal logic system. So that's why just talking isn't effective communication. Understanding that everybody has their own interpretation and then delivering it in a way that almost everybody gets the same interpretation, that's pretty cool, right? Now, definitely, those logical assumptions are based off of their previous experience, just like we talked about earlier. For example, if you let go of an orange, it's going to hit the table or hit the ground. Gravity still works. You've experienced that your whole life, so it's logical to assume that when you let go of something, it drops. You understand it so fully that it's not even something you're consciously aware of. So that's the logical assumption that the audience is bringing to the table, so that when the magician demonstrates that gravity doesn't work anymore and that woman is floating up off the stage, that's why their logical assumptions are shown to not be true. Right? Mm-hmm. I assume that that woman will drop to the floor when he whisks the table out from underneath her. Oh, I'm surprised. She did not. My assumption that gravity is still working has been shown to not be true. And that's the magical effect.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So in the context of a magic show, that's a delightful experience. In the context of a sales process, allowing your prospect or your client to make logical assumptions that you later show to not be true is usually a bad thing. We call that lying. So saying that you're going to deliver this and then you underdeliver because they were logically assuming that you were going to do what you said you were going to do and then you don't, well, that's lying. That's the wrong context to be not fulfilling their assumptions. So what you want to do is allow them to create logical assumptions and then surpass their highest expectations. That's amazing customer service. That's awesome sales. That's being a phenomenal communicator for the value of your company.
Mm. So at the beginning, you mentioned that, you know, there's not a lot of competition in this field that you're doing, and you're clearly doing some pretty awesome stuff. You're at the professional level now. But was it a quick route up, or did you experience some failures along the way, or, you know, how did that process look?
It's a circuitous process, meandering lateral changes that it happens in jumps and starts. I like to think of my life as an electron, right? And valence levels. So at its lowest level, its lowest power, it's at the low level. Well, it doesn't, it jumps between levels after enough energy has been put into it, and then it jumps. So it's kind of like that in life, where you put in a lot of effort, you put in a lot of energy, a lot of work, a hard effort, and you're not seeing any results for a long time. And it makes it feel like it's in a plateau, but eventually you've put in enough effort and then suddenly, boom, it jumps up. Right. And now I made it to the next level. And then you keep working hard. And then things stagnate. And then, oh, now I'm in another plateau. But really, you just got to put in as much work and effort and results as you have to reach the next level. So there's a saying that says it takes 10 years to make an overnight success. So it's 10 years of failures, of learning lessons, of doing it the hard way, of learning how to make it look like it's easy. And then people only see the quote unquote easy results that you can get. Oh, well, it's easy for you. Well, yeah, because I've put in hard work for decades, right? So that's why I love Kung Fu too. Kung Fu originally means the high level of skill and ability achieved solely through prolonged time of hard work and effort, right? So it's not just punching and kicking. It's a high skill level developed with lots of time put in to practice. Yeah. So there've been lots of failures, lots of setbacks, but for the most part, I don't remember most of them. I just kind of try to learn the lesson and move on, because it's not my failures that are going to get me what I want. It's learning what those failures taught me that will help me get where I need to go.
And that is so powerful. And I think it just knowing that simple fact can be so helpful when you're going throughout the process of trying to create something great or doing something new. Because if you just keep that fact in your mind that it's, like you said, did you say electron?
Yeah.
I love that example. And like, if you're just working at it and you're not seeing results, if you just keep that in your mind and you keep at it, it's going to be a whole lot easier than, you know, thinking you're just working at it and you may just never get any results.
Right. So and another way of thinking about it is imagine your project or wherever it is that you want to go. Your life is a rocket ship and it's about to take off. All right. So you want to reach for the stars. You want to get there. So you got to have a rocket ship that's capable of doing it. So you've got to build a structure, right? There we go with that organization again. And then your dedication and commitment to the outcome is your fuel, all right? And then your daily applied effort is ignition. Now, what happens to a rocket ship if it fires its engines for 1 second at a time and then takes a couple seconds off?
Right back down.
Right. It just crashes and burns and explodes. Right. So you've got to apply consistent, constant, persistent effort to break Earth's gravity. And at first, progress is super slow. You're moving so slow. And it's kind of like, what's even the use? But if you give up, if you stop making that progress, you're going to crash and burn. And now you're going to be farther back than you were even when you started. Right? So that's why intermittent application of motivation, I'll do it when I'm motivated. Well, that's why motivation doesn't get you anywhere, man. Because it's waiting for an emotional state. It's state-dependent activity. Like, I don't care how you feel about it. I don't care how motivated you feel. That rocket ship is going to crash and burn if you stop. So don't stop, right? Keep going. Put in the time and effort consistently every day, and little progress incrementally will eventually move faster and faster and faster until you can finally break free of the gravity of the inertia of how your life used to be. And now you've broken free into orbit and you can go anywhere you want, right? And now you're finally weightless and you're accelerating at a faster and faster rate towards your destination. And suddenly it feels like it's effortless. You're weightless, man, right? That's how it is with making any change, with any progress. That's exactly what happens with your life.
That's so awesome. Now, I know you wrote a little bit about the difference between daydreaming and actually doing something and how, you know, as good as daydreaming can be, it can actually be kind of detrimental. Do you mind expanding on that a little bit as well?
Yeah. Being able to imagine and daydream and free associate and find connections that you didn't realize were there before is phenomenally powerful. But if all you do is daydream and think about all these wonderful things I could be doing and I'm going to, you get the same dopamine hits as though you actually had done the thing. So then you've already gotten the feel good from it without actually having to do it. So why am I going to do all the hard work of actually doing the thing when I can just think about it and feel the same way? Right?
Yeah.
So your mental process, there are actually four distinct modes. There's the imagination mode, where it's the free association and just setting free to dream up things that didn't exist before. Then there's the kind of computing power, right? Where you're really doing hard mathematics, like, okay, well, 64 times 3 times carry the 1. And you're really thinking, right? Processing and computing. Then there's attention. Just like we were talking about earlier in the cocktail party, your mind is actively filtering out things and then only paying attention to what you value, right? So it's kind of like the broad, dim illumination of your standard, okay, I'm paying a little attention to everything, can they get laser focused on one thing and illuminate it at a million watts, right? So that's what you pay attention to, where you're attending to a particular person, situation, idea. And lastly, there's awareness, which is the substrate. That's the fundamental part of your mind and you and your being, right? So you are the awareness of your experiences. Because when you go to sleep, your conscious mind, those conscious processes are offline, right? And your dreaming mind is set up to enable the free association. So that's kind of the imagination run rampant. But if there's a noise that happens, your awareness is still there to bring your conscious mind, your thinking mind, and your attention mind back online to attend to it, right? So awareness is the fundamental mental process that is always there. And it's you that's aware of all your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, but you aren't those things, right? So understanding that those are the four modes that you of your awareness has, now you can understand which mode you're operating in and decide, is this the most appropriate mode for this particular context, relationship, or situation?
I love it, man. To kind of wrap things up, I want to ask you a couple questions. First, do you mind just giving people, all the listeners, a place where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want the book or the video course that dives into all these crazy ideas, thinklikeamindreader.com is the best place to go. You'll find the links to Amazon and all that good stuff. If you want to connect with me, best place to do that is on Twitter, the_Pritchard, PRITCHARD. And from there, you can find my website, jonathanpritchard.guide, all that good stuff. But basically, you find one of these, you'll find everything. So just go to one of those and down the rabbit hole you can go.
Awesome. And I'll link to all that in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Okay, so I have a section on the show called My Current Obsession. And basically, is there something right now that you're currently obsessed with? And it could be anything. It could be a song, a person, a place, a color, just anything right now that you're just weirdly obsessed with.
Absolutely. The thing I'm weirdly obsessed with is Wing Chun Kung Fu. Like, honest to goodness, that is kind of my life's obsession. Because all this talk about abstract stuff doesn't mean anything if somebody can punch you in the face, right? So you've got to know how to navigate physical reality. Like, that's the baseline consideration. So you've got to know how to conduct yourself in the physical world, and then you'll have that baseline benchmark to judge all this abstract stuff against. So all of this advice, all these things I talk about have to be grounded in, okay, but can somebody punch me in the face? So I think about Kung Fu when I wake up. It's the first thing I do every morning. I wake up, my feet hit the ground, and then I do my Kung Fu forms. And I've done that for the past 8-9 years now. Like, it really is my life's obsession.
That's awesome. I'd love to hear it for sure. And then I always like to do a question of the week. And this is just going to be the classic. You are stranded on a desert island. And you get to bring three things with you. The three things cannot get you off of the island. What are they?
I like that stipulation of you're not going to finagle your way out of this.
Exactly.
There was a book growing up that my dad had on the bookshelf. I think it's still there. It's like the Robin Hood handbook, and it's survival skills and techniques and stuff. So I'm going to take that physical survival skills book. So that way I know how to not die.
Right? Awesome.
Yeah. And I would probably take my wooden dummy, my Kung Fu training buddy. So that way I could still keep up with my Kung Fu skills. So when the wild boars attack me, I can wrestle them real good. And last but not least, can I bring my group of friends, consign them to doom too? I'm going to bring more people.
I'll give it to you. Yeah. They might not be too happy with it. But
if I'm going down, they're going down with me. We'll at least have each other.
Awesome, man. And then do you have a final message for all the listeners?
Change your mind, change your life. It's entirely possible. Whatever negative reaction you're having to that statement are your limiting beliefs that you absolutely got to rip out by the root. And if you want to do that faster, please, please reach out to me. It is my life's work and what I'm on this planet to do. So I want to hear from you. Please say hello and connect any way that you can.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jonathan. I'll be sure to link everything from the show, all your socials and everything else that listeners can view in the show notes. So thank you, man.
My pleasure. And it's an honor being able to share my message with the world.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I appreciate each and every one of you. As always, feel free to reach out at any point with any comments, any questions, or pretty much anything else that you'd like. If you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on our website, earlyrisersmovement.com, or hit me up on Instagram at earlyrisersmovement. And if you enjoyed the show, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. With that being said, I hope you're one step closer to becoming an early riser, and I will talk to you next time. Keep killing it, everyone.